Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's March 20th, 2012. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. Tonight's topic is beer with friends. We've got a great group in the house tonight. We got Justin Phillips. You guys, I'll say your name and you say hello or you can say your name. Justin from Beer Table.
Hey, Jimmy. How are you?
How are you? Jeff Cialetti from Beverage World.
Hey, how's it going?
Josh Bernstein.
Hello.
Himself. And Seth Wright from Beer Nation TV.
What up, Jimmy?
We're
ready.
So we're going to talk a little bit about Justin's new beer table at Grand Central Station. Josh brought us some beer from Ohio, and Jeff and Seth are going to talk about some films they've made about beer. But first, a shout out to our sponsors, GreatBrewers.com. Check out the beer cloud. Have any of you used the beer cloud lately to locate beers that you want to try? You got to go to GreatBrewers.com. The beer cloud's pretty awesome. You can find a beer and where it's sold and a lot more information about it. So check out GreatBrewers.com and try their beer cloud app. And also we're supported by the Good Beer Seal, an association of 34 New York City beer bars that will soon be expanding. GoodBeerSeal.com. All right, here we are. Roberta's in Bushwick in Brooklyn, a great restaurant. We're drinking. I'm drinking a Firestone Walker IPA. And Josh, you brought us some Ohio beers. Let's tell a story about how this happened and what brought you to Ohio.
Well, I grew up in Ohio. I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, and then I went to college at Ohio University. And so I try to get back there once or twice a year, but it's kind of a challenge sometimes. But in this case, I had my book on craft beer, Brewed Awakening, came out, and then we decided to kind of roll it all in together, like do a book tour swing, and then as well as see how many delicious Ohio beers were out there. And I mean, Ohio's kind of lagged behind in craft beer for a while, but over the last few years, we've seen a lot of these great breweries been bubbling up, really focusing on Ohio's agrarian nature. You know, we got a whole bunch of students that like to drink beer, and so it's a lot of possibility for really delicious stuff. So I went out and got you a selection because you asked me to get beer, Jimmy.
Thank you. So what are we drinking first?
The first one is the Four C's, and that's from Brew Kettle. And then the Four C's are some of the classic American hops, and so and everyone here is drinking it right now. So, and that's the ones in here is Cascade, Centennial, Columbus, and Chinook. And Brew Kettle is from Strongsville, Ohio, and they've been making like some really solid, great, easy drinking beers over the last few years.
Wow. Jeff, do you have anything to say about this? I mean, so we're drinking beers from Ohio that you can't get in New York State. How does that work?
How does it work? That's a good question. I think it has to do with the passion of the people drinking it. If you want something, you can go and get it, whether it's distributed here or not. There are channels. People do beer trades. People do, you know, some states allow direct shipping. Others don't. New York does now. It didn't always, but it does now. So that helps a little bit. So the states that allow it, you can get it. So if you want it, you can get it.
All right. Cool.
And so,
what
do you
got? Ohio beers. Can I sing my song? For Dead in Ohio.
And so I think one of the, we'll go on to another one. One of the classic Ohio breweries that everyone seems to love is Great Lakes, which has been around, been really one of the people that have been really driving craft beer in Ohio for a long time. And so it is one of the big shames that we can't actually get their beer in New York City. I think you can get it in Pennsylvania is the closest it comes here. And so anytime I bring back some of this, people tend to really dig it. And so the one we're going to pop right now is the Elliott Ness, which is a really nice, easy drinking amber lager. So everyone, finish up your beers and we're going to bottoms up.
Are they the ones that do Edmund Fitzgerald?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that one, yeah.
Which is an excellent, excellent porter.
So you think that in every, do you think every state has a really interesting mix of, you know, craft breweries right now? Or do certain states stick out in your mind?
Well, you know, I mean, the issue and the challenge overall is you can have a great idea for a brewery, but if your state is not going to allow you to do it, if there's, you know, hindrances on alcohol by volume, packaging laws, and so it's really patchwork right now. And that's why a lot of the states down south are kind of stuck with these antiquated laws that people have been really fighting tooth and nail to overturn right now, which is why, you know, states like Oregon had a much more permissive outlook toward craft beer, which is why you saw a lot of it flowering. And then, you know, New York State itself is catching on right now. The state is really behind craft breweries, and they really feel it's like a way to really focus on what New York's all about, like the agriculture. And then we had a big hop-producing tradition in the state, which died out with disease.
Well, Justin, any have you ever been to Ohio?
Never.
Never?
Actually, that's not true. I've been through Ohio.
There, yeah.
Do you sell American beer at a beer table in Brooklyn?
Definitely. Yeah.
Like, what are some beers that you sell?
Oh, gosh. I mean, sort of all over the map. I mean, definitely Jolly Pumpkin, and we've done some Founders lately, and definitely the, you know, some of the local stuff, Six Point in Brooklyn, and all those guys work their way in here and there.
And what's interesting to me is that all these breweries, I've heard of Great Lakes, but they're not available in New York. Are any Ohio breweries available in New York?
God, not really that I can think of right now. I mean, there's nothing that really comes to mind. Right? Oh, Hop and Frog out of Akron, I think. They do a lot of like really giant imperial beers, like giant double IPAs, triple IPAs, pumpkin beers. But besides that, I don't really know of a ton of Ohio stuff that really makes its way up here. I mean, part of it is production and economies of scale. If you're going to make your way into New York City, you better have a lot of beer out there. And so oftentimes they just, and you know, it's also, if you're a hometown favorite, there's no sense to really expand and go bigger if you're making a comfortable living. I mean, there's not really a need.
You know, a couple weeks ago, Garrett Oliver was on from Brooklyn Brewery, and he said that, I guess Brooklyn Brewery is a really big exporter of beer, and they said they're the number one exporter of American craft beer.
Mm-hmm.
And their biggest market is Sweden. Is pretty wild. Justin, would you ever go, if you found a brewery that you liked somewhere else in America, would you try to work with a distributor to have them take that on just so you could serve that at beer table? Or do you usually just work with existing
I brands? Have not actually done that. I mean, I certainly know other folks who've made those sorts of efforts. That's not something that I have any experience with. You know, I certainly respect those who do hunt them down and bring them in.
Well, Justin, let's switch to you because you've really been a star for a lot of us. I mean, we love Beer Table. It's so tiny, but it's so precious. You've just opened a place that's totally different in Grand Central. Tell us about that because I haven't even been there yet.
Oh, yeah. So think of Beer Table and what we do. It's you know, everything is it is very small, as you said, but, you know, everything's there for a reason. And so the pantry is really – it's the retail version of what I do there. It's basically relating beer back to food, but it's only to go. So it literally is like a fancy little closet for beer. It's 150 square feet. It's, you know, it's really the size of this room. I can touch both walls at once. You know, it's teeny tiny.
Yeah, we didn't really think Beer Table could get much smaller, but we found a way to really make Beer Table even smaller.
Yeah.
And make Grand Central consumer or Grand Central commuters really happy.
Yeah.
My coworkers just got me my birthday presents from Beer Table at Grand Central,
oh,
as a
cool.
matter of fact.
So. Nice.
So it's almost like anybody coming into Grand Central can go to Beer Table Pantry and
of course,
leave
yeah.
with some beer. So do you sell more bottles or do you sell growlers?
We still sell more bottles. You know, we do a huge amount of growlers, but, I mean, bottles are the thing. People coming in and trying a bunch of different things. So, you know, we're always on the move trying to keep the selection changing, probably 5 to 10 bottles a day change. It's pretty rapid fire, as you'd expect in a place like that. It needs to be. Everybody's so used to being able to buy, you know, like two beers there. So they're really, it's fun having a business where people can show up and they're like, why was this not here before? You know?
Well, that's the whole thing with the small, you're able to change it constantly. Yeah. You go in there. I mean, what's your inventory like? 100 bottles?
Not even. I always think it's 100 because it looks like at least that much, but it's usually 70, 80 bottles somewhere in there.
But that allows you to really like, you know, choreograph or put it out exactly what you want to give mm-hmm. to the people. Don't let them choose. You got the best of 10 different styles, and that's what, you know, it's like a wine store.
Yeah.
They don't have every single beer out there.
That's a great comparison. You really work more like a wine guy than a traditional beer guy. Did you bring us some beers today, Justin?
I did, yeah. I brought.
So these are representative of what you're selling at the Beer Table Pantry right now?
Yeah, it was they're all three contrasting things, one of which is our beer that just came out, but it's they all use a little bit of Brett, so I just wanted to do like a classic that you guys all know.
Orval.
Great. So Orval, you've got Orval.
Side by side with our table beer, the first of the series, which is done by Brandstrom Kiev.
So you've got, is that considered like a Stillwater label, or is it your label?
So it is my label, but it's for this, I mean, the idea is this is not something I make money on. I'm asking a bunch of different brewers to interpret the idea of table wine, but in beer form, something that they want to drink every day. And I'm in no way involved in recipe or anything at all. I just commit to buying it.
Well, let's start over with that. So you first told us about Orval,
yeah,
which some people say is the best Trappist beer. Some people think is the best beer in Belgium. Now, that has a little bit of Brett in it, doesn't it?
It does,
is it like
yeah,
a triple with Brett?
I mean, stylistically, I don't know that I would call it a triple, but yeah, it's kind of golden in color. Definitely has you get that kind of earthy, horsey thing going on. I thought it'd be fun to compare just because though Brian used a little Brett in this.
Well, let's do it. Come on.
Yeah.
So you got your beer is being put up against Orval, one of the finest.
Put up against is not how I would put it, but.
Well, now it is. So.
Very well.
Let's see. We've got an esteemed panel of, you know.
Good.
Industry judges here.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I drink a lot of beer, so I should know.
Yeah,
all right, all right.
And we're all judges in some way. But so, like, tell us again about this beer. So you wanted a style that was evoke wine?
I mean, no restrictions at all. What I asked Brian to do, and I'm asking other brewers to do, is to brew a beer that they actually believe they could consume one of every day for the rest of their life. You know, something that they could go back to. Has, you know, they find it interesting, yet it's something that they could just revisit
so
over
this
and
is
over
beyond,
and over.
This isn't session beer. This is something else. This is more like a personal interpretation.
A desert island beer.
It totally could be a session beer. In this case, it absolutely is. Do you have a glass, Jimmy?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, our friend Sam Merritt, he teaches his Cicerone training class. And one of the first things he asks people is, you know, what would be your desert island beer? And I'm going to tell him to start recommending your beer.
Well, it's, you know, this is a one-time thing. So Brian brewed this beer once, and then, you know, it'll be followed by another brewer's interpretation of the same idea.
Now, so is it only being sold at Beer Table? And if so, like, what was the actual, like, barrel that you guys wanted to go for this?
Yeah, so it's not just Beer Table.
Okay.
We started out that way the last couple weeks, uh-huh, and then tonight is actually our official launch of it. We're doing over at Blue Ribbon Bakery Kitchen in the West Village, and they're going to put it on a couple of their places, and they've been supportive of it. And then we'll kick it out there and make it available to whoever wants it until
well,
it's
that's
gone.
Great.
And
so
when it's gone, it's gone.
You're like a collaborator. How does this fit in with what you're doing?
I don't consider myself a collaborator at all in terms of the making of the beer. It's really, I'm just wanting to get a bunch of different brewers involved in answering the same questions, just sort of putting them up in a forum where it'll be really fun at the end of the year to taste, you know, 6 or 12 of these things side mm-hmm. by side.
Wow.
And, you know, then we'll follow it with, you know, something that's not meant to be their everyday beer, really their last beer. So in like their last meal, but in beer form. So.
What do you guys think about this beer?
There's a lot going on in this. I think this is pretty awesome. It's very wild. I mean, it feels like if there was a musical equivalent to it, I would say it's jazz because there's just so much going on. It's like a saison that just went off the reservation. That's kind of what my thought is.
Josh, what do you think about this?
You know, it's interesting because I don't know if it's like the temperature in this, but you definitely get a lot more like Brett and that flavor on the back end and less of like effervescence to really like take it across your palate. So for me, it tends like sit there a bit heavier on there, but it's still a very drinkable. Like it's soft in the beginning, but then just like sits in the back with all that really nice, you know, the barnyard flavors, which we need to find a better word for barnyard.
Yeah, totally.
Seth, what do you think about this?
I definitely like it, but the question I always get when people come up to me is like, what's your favorite beer right now? Or the same sort of question, like, what would be the beer you'd want to drink forever?
Right.
And like, it's, I can't answer the question.
Yeah, yeah.
I could definitely answer brewery. Give me a brewery forever, sure, and I'll take it. I don't want to say, but that would be easier.
Well,
you know?
Well, tell us, what is, what's your favorite brewery right now, Seth?
I would have to say like that Victory does an amazing job all the way across the board. There's nothing that's like, you know, you kind of like, I wouldn't get a six of that. Like, I would get a six of everything that they have, and I could definitely last forever drinking all the different styles that they do.
You know, so. It's interesting you mentioned Victory, because I get that question all the time, too. It's like, what's your favorite beer right now? And yeah. I'm just like, my good God. And I find it easier to answer something than it is to sit there and then just have this endless awkward conversation with people explaining my personal philosophy. And so, but one of my go-to beers is a Victory Prima Pils, which I think is just like, you know, low alcohol. I mean, full of flavor, great nose, like great prickly carbonation, like a beer that, you know, I could happily drink for hours on end and not get bored of it.
Jeff, what's your favorite beer?
I mean, I don't have a favorite. The answer I usually give on that one is, well, I haven't had them all yet, so how can I say what my favorite is? But this week, I would have to say, because I was just in Vegas last week, and there's a new gastropub there called, it's called Public House. It's at the Venetian, and they had Sierra Ruthless Rye on cask, and that was a religious experience drinking that beer. I mean, it was just the perfect temperature. And talk about a beer that has a lot going on in it. That was just so just amazingly transcendent. So that's what I like this week. Next week it'll be something different, but that's what it is this week.
And it definitely has a lot to do with what you're doing. Were you sitting by the pool? I mean, like, you know, that helps a lot to think the beer is delicious.
No, I was just in the bar.
Oh, yeah. And you hadn't lost any money yet?
No, I actually, this time around, I actually had a lot of willpower. I didn't do any gambling, but I'm going back in a couple of weeks, and I don't know if I'm going to have so much willpower then.
I think Las Vegas is evil. I'd rather ask my beer guru here, Justin Phillip. Justin, I know you don't want to say it, but what's your favorite brewery right now, besides Stillwater?
Yeah. I mean, I've absolutely been kind of stuck on Schoenrammer, the Pils and the Fest beer lately. I love those beers. I don't know if you guys know those or not.
I haven't even heard of it.
Great, great. Just like really old school Bavarian pils. Just super tasty and really round and refreshing. And I've been having those stuck at both places for quite a while now, last couple months.
Okay, so we had your beer table Stillwater collaboration.
Yeah.
Let's try Orval.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about that. I mean, I like this. So you're saying there's a little bit of Brett in this beer from Stillwater.
Yeah, I used a few strains of Brett and a little bit of primary yeast from Orval. So...
And it's about, you said 4.7%.
And honestly, I'm serving all these warm because the table beer. There we go.
Yeah, I was going to say that exact thing. Would this be something at your? Because I love going to the restaurants where they have they don't do it with beer yet, but they have the wine on the table, and if you feel like opening it and drinking it, you pay for it. If you don't, it just sits there.
Right.
So like, this would be awesome to be like, yeah, I'm feeling it. I hate when the waiters don't come over. I need a drink. Just please, just bring me a drink. I can't focus. I can't think. You know, like, so if I could just like sit down and like, that would be great.
Seth, I'm glad you're on the show because we only have 15 beers in front of us.
Right. But they have that draft thing at a lot of bars. Like, in a lot of sports bars now, they have that draft tower thing where you can go in there and you can, like, they have, like, instant tap system where you can actually pour your own beer, which, I don't know, that seems...
For real? Bad. I don't even think that's legal.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Let's go back to...
Let's not
back
talk
to
about Justin. SLA stuff.
Justin, right? Tell us about Orval, because Orval, I don't think it gets its fair share these days, but I still think people say that it's the best Belgian beer, or at least...
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely loved among beer people. You know, it's one of the classics for sure. You know, it's a brewery that only puts out one beer commercially, especially for export. But it's beautiful, really well made, and it's the only one that's at all wild among the Trappist beers. I don't know. I can always revisit it. I'm very happy with it.
You know, nice it's, you know what's nice about this style is that, I mean, at Jimmy's Number 43, we do in April every year, like an April Sours event with wild yeast and sour beers and lambics. And everyone thinks like sour has to be like, you know, a goose or really extreme lambic. But you're saying that you can put some Brett into a beer like the Orval and your beer table beer. I don't taste any sourness.
No, it's just like lightly tart in the finish. Definitely like a little puckery, zesty.
Yeah, I'm tasting it.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff, Josh, what do you think about that? The use of Brett and to help what finish a beer or what? How do you describe that? Because when I hear Brett, I always think it's going to be soury, wild, yeasty. What? But this is like, this Orval is a classic example, but it's very well balanced.
Well, I think the thing with Brett is like, it's also, when are you getting the beer? Has it been, the Brett been in there for a long time? Because then, I mean, Brett doesn't stop really devouring the sugars. It just keeps going and going and going. So sometimes if beer's been stuck on a dusty shelf with Brett in there, it can be pretty terrible. But you know, it's all about finding and knowing like when the beer was bottled and like that. And like, but I think overall I really enjoy it. It adds like a really nice clean character. Like the next beer we're going to try is like a great example of a big commercial brewery taking a big risk.
Yeah.
What's the next beer?
The Rayon Vert from Green Flash.
Yeah, let's pour that. And while we do that, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Okay, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. Here we are celebrating the Good Brew Seal, goodbrewseal.com, and some of the really cool guys that are part of that, including Justin Phillips from Beer Table. Justin, when the Good Brew Seal started in 2009, you were, of course, one of the first bars that were tapped. And it's always great to sit with you and always great to work with you. How did you ever get started? I mean, I know you had been a beer... Work for Beer Importer, Be United, but what made you make that leap from being a beer rep to owning your own bar?
I didn't even really want to open a bar at first. I really wanted to open a retail store. Before Be United, I worked for a retail wine store up in Boston, and I loved it. It was a great experience. It was the best, you know, hourly job I ever had. Sort of a life-changing
thing.
Which
store was that?
It was actually Best Sellers, which was a small chain at the time. It was great. I learned a lot. I got to taste a lot. I took a bunch of classes and just, like, really fell into wine, and that was my vehicle for getting into food, honestly. I drank beer. I didn't really know anything about it, and I hadn't really been exposed to anything really special until I met the Be United folks. So I absolutely always credit them for opening my eyes to what beer could be, and then for giving me the, you know, the crazy chance at working for them. That was how I fell into it.
And how long is Beer Table open now? 4 years?
A little more than 4 years.
4 years. And how has it evolved for you since what you first opened, what you imagined it to be, to what it is now?
Yeah, I mean, it's stayed pretty consistent. The main things that change always are our food program, just because we essentially don't really have a kitchen, but we've always tried to play restaurant. And that's, you know, challenging and at times really pleasurable, but most of the time it kind of, you know, beats you up. So, but that's the thing that's changed most of the time.
And then when you opened up the Beer Table Pantry at Grand Central Station, I mean, what are you seeing from people that are going through Grand Central Station? Are you saying that you have the best beer in New York and people are clamoring for it, or do they not at their destination, like on Long Island or Westchester, do they not have good beer shops to pick up the beers have?
I think a lot of them do have good beer stores at their destinations, and I'm in no way claiming to be, you know, the greatest beer store in New York or anything like that, but what I am trying to do is put very good beer in a place that needed it, you know, and in a place that's it's difficult as a small business owner to open up. Midtown's not an easy place to set up shop. So it felt kind of like a desert to me, and that, you know, that seemed like opportunity. And beyond that, I wanted exactly the opposite experience of what I have at Beer Table in terms of clientele. I wanted, you know, cross-section of everyone, you know, and Grand Central's perfect for that.
And one of the beautiful things about Grand Central and the New York State train system over there is that you can drink on the train.
Yep, you
and
can drink on the train, you can drink downstairs, you can drink in the park.
And so it used to be that, you know, people just get, you know, their big cans of Bud Light or Coors Light and just, like, get them and go, and they'd have the little stands waiting there for people. Yep. But, I mean, this is really elevating the idea of what, like, your after work beer can be for commuters, because it's always been like grab to get on the train and go.
Yeah. I had no idea that, I mean, 9 out of 10 of our customers would be commuters, but that is the way that it is. So
if I went to your Beer Table Pantry in Grand Central, I could buy a couple of beers, hop on a train, ride the train, drink some beers,
absolutely,
and then come back.
Exactly.
I was going to say after
beer train.
You pick up your iPad at the new Apple store there. You could have a couple of pints while you're figuring it out on the train on the way home. So, I mean, it's really kind of amazing sort of cross-marketing going on between beer and Apple products.
Wow. Awesome. So, Josh, let's go back to Ohio Beers, too, because we have so many guests, and it's so awesome on the show. You guys, we just drank what beer did we just drink? Green Flash, what?
Rayon Vert.
Rayon Vert. And what is that beer?
you know, style wise, actually, I don't even really know what they were going for, but I think it's delicious. It's pale, semi strong, a good amount of bread, like very, very apparently there.
So you gave us a theme. You had Orval, you had your beer table beer, mm-hmm. and now we have the Green Flash Lambert.
I tend to describe that beer, the Green Flash one, as kind of like Orval done by San Diego.
Yeah.
It's like that big, like hoppy, like super lean juicy. Body flavor, and it's like, but it's got that nice bread, which really works well with it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Josh, you want to pour us an Ohio beer, or should we? Do you have any more beers, Justin?
That was it. Those three.
All right.
Sorry.
Let's go back to Ohio.
So, because we're on the sour theme, I'm not sure if this one was intentionally sour, or if it was. I know they, it says Gatekeeper. This is their, by Indigo Imp, which is a brewery out of Cleveland, and so this is the Robust Porter, and so I got it, and like they've done some, they've had some issues with infection before, where they've had their dark beers have come out being a little sour, which I don't really mind it in this one so much. It's kind of really refreshing, and like the sourness plays really well with the darkness, because people don't usually think sour beer and think dark. It's like, but I think like the little bit of sour notes really help round out a lot of the dark roasted malts and do a nice job.
I've had some dark saisons, like Barry has a dark saison. I think that
I think Barry has everything.
Yeah, they have everything. I think they have like 30 styles.
That's the 30 styles are the ones they do consistently all the time. I mean, I don't know how many hundreds they've done that they don't do consistently all the time.
Yeah, cool. And Justin, is there a style that you wish people would be making? I mean, you've got your lineup coming. Tell us, let me start over. Who's going to make the, you have a series now, Stillwater made the beer table, the first one.
Yeah.
So who else is lined up for you, and do you have a style in mind?
I shouldn't announce names until we have the order figured out, but there is a website, tablebeer.com, that you can check out, and you'll actually be able to see them as they roll out.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's cool.
It's secrets.
Secrets.
I like that.
Josh, what do you think about that?
About this beer we're drinking
right now? The collaboration that he's talking about.
No, the collaboration is great. You know, I think you've seen a lot of brewers collaborate together, but you've seen less on the, you know, the retail side collaborating with actual brewers. I mean, it makes sense in a lot of ways because that's where the people are going to be drinking the beer, and that's where the people with the most knowledge, I think, are going to be able to discuss it. Like, and that's, for me, that's a big issue with bars and, you know, beer shops that they sell great product, but they don't really have a way to describe it to people. So it's kind of, it's, you can have the greatest beer selection in the world, but if no one is there to really guide you, it doesn't really do any good.
Yeah. I guess one of the big motivations behind this whole thing, too, is just after a few years of operating Beer Table and only pouring, you know, really, really wacky stuff, I kind of got to the point where I really am interested in seeing what brewers have to offer that is, like, their classic everyday drink, you know? So not just the weirdest of the weird, but just things that they find delicious and even simple sometimes. So,
I mean, giving away names, are there some examples of styles that we might
check out? The
nothing,
website.
Come on. Well, tell us again. What's
this
the website?
Fun, tablebeer.com.
All right, I'm gonna have to get crazier because you guys
beer
are
table,
quiet.
Table,
all
right, beer, it's all the same.
Okay, you have to tell me each something outrageous. Okay, what did you do this weekend, Justin? That was slightly outrageous.
Not much. I changed diapers. And, you know.
Oh yeah, that's right. Kid number two, right?
Yeah.
So this is your. Let's go back to Ohio. Come on. I want to know more about Ohio beers because I've never been. I actually drove across Ohio once.
Yeah, that's what everyone
stayed there.
That's what everyone says. Everyone's like, Ohio. Like, I drove through it or I flew over it. And and you know what? Growing up in Ohio, I tend to have this like sense of severe pride because I'm kind of like a. My parents grew up in New York City and they moved to Ohio for their job. So I've got these like resolutely New York Jewish parents. And I grew up in Ohio and it never really felt like Midwest to me. And it's still not the Midwest. We can drive from Dayton to New York City in like 10, 12 hours tops. And so that's not very far away. And so I've always got I always try to stand up for Ohio as much as I can. It's like.
So how about this? Josh, read us the names of the breweries that you've brought because we're not going to get to try them all and what towns they're from. How about that? Let's
we'll do that quick. We got Indigo Imp Gatekeeper from Cleveland, Ohio. Great Lakes from Cleveland, Ohio. Brew Kettle from Strongsville. And then, gosh, what else we got up there? Oh, Three Frogs, which is their nice, which is from Elevator Brewing Company in Columbus, Ohio. And these are all like, you know, they're all great solid beers, but nothing that anyone's going to, you're not going to want to sit there and trade for them online. But I mean, that's not really the point, I think. We need more breweries that are really, that speak to people for their region, for their cities, and just become like the best damn beer in town.
Yeah, and I think that Great Lakes is an amazing beer, but I don't want to say this really, but I hope it never comes to New York because, I mean, I really feel like the localness of these beers, we shouldn't know all of them. Because if we did, they'd all be just trying to push as much as they could to us. Stay local. You know, like, I know there's a whole bunch of breweries that are pulling back. I know that Stone is like was in 35 states and now they're in 22. And people are really pissed. But, like, come on. You're 2,000 to 3,000 miles away. you know, it can't be, the quality can't be the same traveling like that. So, you know, let's stay tighter. 200 or 300 miles really is as far as you should drink a beer from a different brewery. And so the fact that we don't know these Ohio breweries is not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, let the Midwest have all their amazing beers, and the South and the Northeast. I kind of think the Northeast needs to, like, step up its game. But, like, the fact that we're drinking Green Flash and I Love It and Stone and all that, I don't think we need to. You know, it's very far away.
Well, it's interesting because I've had a good deal of Great Lakes. I'm actually in Chicago a lot for my job, and my sort of go-to bar is the Clark Street Ale House on Clark Street, obviously. And they always have something from Great Lakes on tap. So I guess I've just sort of taken it for granted, but the fact that it's not available in New York, I didn't even realize, because it's always kind of been there. Like, my sort of go-to place, I always try to stay in, there's this hotel that's half a block away from the Ale House there, and that becomes sort of my go-to bar right before I head back to the hotel and go to bed, and I just kind of sit there. It feels like my second home, and there's something extremely familiar. Yeah, there's just something extremely familiar about a lot of Midwestern beers. You know, obviously, there's a lot of Illinois stuff there because of Chicago, but, you know, they do always have something from Great Lakes, so it actually is kind of surprising that you can't get it here, because it is sort of, that has sort of become my home away from home, and it's added sort of familiarity to it to me.
Well, why are there these cult beers? Because the beers that you just tasted us, Josh, from Ohio, there's a couple that are really blowing my mind. Like, what's the one I'm drinking right now?
Oh, that's the Three Frogs from Elevator Brewing Company, which is a small
little good.
Small little brew pub in Columbus. You know, you're not going to sit there. I mean, they only started bottling stuff in the last year or two, but they do, like, really awesome, I mean, totally drinkable stuff. And it's just, you know, and that's the thing. You're going to find great beers across the country now, whereas before you kind of relied upon these big breweries to finally land in town. Like, you finally got Stone at your bar. You finally got Dogfish out of your bar. But no, now people are kind of taking it upon themselves and saying, like, we can make this great beer too. And so they need to rely less upon national brands, I think, and more upon, like, local ingenuity. I mean, you're seeing this replicated across the country. I think 2012 is going to be the year that things really finally turn local. I don't mean everyone using their own grains and hops, because that's just not feasible. It's like every baker is not going to grow their own wheat, and, like, every butcher is not going to tend to his own herd of cattle. So actually, but you can, like, rely upon locally sourced ingredients, and you can also become the best small brewer in town.
I mean, when I travel, one of the things that I try to do is drink only stuff that's you know, local, in the sense that it's regional, and, you know, I kind of have, like, a couple state rule where, you know, it has to be from this state or from, you know, one or two states over, and stuff, preferably stuff that I can't get at home, and I consciously avoid stuff that I'm very familiar with. Like, if I happen to see a Brooklyn beer in, you know, whether it's L.A., Chicago, even I've seen it overseas. I've been in Copenhagen, and then they had Brooklyn stuff. I consciously try to avoid that, because I really, there is no sort of substitute for drinking as close to the source as possible. Yep. And, I mean, there's a whole burgeoning subgroup of travelers, beer travel. And, I mean, what's the point of traveling for beer if you're just going to have stuff that you can have at home? So the whole point is, drink as close to the source. You know, whether you're drinking at the brewery or not, or if it's a local bar or whatever, but just drink as close to the source, because there's really no substitute for that. And, you know, buy a t-shirt while you're at it, too.
So where should we go? You told us some of the breweries, Josh. I want to go to Ohio. I want to try some beers.
Well, I can tell you, I mean, it's like personal prejudice, but, like, where I grew up, I went to college at Ohio University, Athens, Ohio. Jackie O's down there is making some of the, some really kick-ass, beautiful sour beers, barrel-aged beers, and just, like, really nice everyday drinking beers. We're talking a town of, like, 30,000, 20,000 students right in the foothills of Appalachia, and, you know, but you go there and they're just making such really nice, easy drinking beer in a really relaxed setting, the type of setting that you want all brew pubs to be, where you can just, like, ante up at the bar, pay, put, like, a $5 bill down and get a pint of beer and, like, usually a couple bucks back. I mean, it's like this ideal mecca, which is kind of what Athens is, but they're going to be starting a production brewery, I think, this summer, and then And so there's going to be some good stuff coming out of there. So hopefully they're going to start seeing them a bit further about. And then also Zanesville, it's got Weasel Boy. And then they just do really, like I was talking about local ingredients. Like this really crazy one in Southeast Ohio is called the pawpaw. Pawpaw is this almost like this like temperate tropical fruit. Really creamy and just like really beautiful. Almost like akin to a mango, but it doesn't travel very well. But when you get it, it's just this. It's just such a beautiful dessert. I think George Washington's favorite dessert was the chilled pawpaw. And so you see a lot of breweries in like the late summer, early fall making a pawpaw beer.
Wow, that's cool. Hey, you know, we're going to have to take a short break here on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back and talk about actually beer video and beer film on Heritage Radio Network.
Oh, how you feel, brother?
Feeling good.
You feel good?
Feeling good.
Play so much bone, brother. How you feel, man?
I feel all right.
I'll call your name. I don't want no people to know you're in here. How you feel, fella? Hey, yeah. Sure getting down. Look at him. Ha. We're gonna have a bunk good time. 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 Let's take him up, Fred.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Is that James Brown on there?
James Brown's cool.
James Brown's
all right.
Cool.
Who has a really interesting experience, a beer and James Brown? Has anybody had an experience like that?
I danced with him once.
Did you really?
No.
No, come on, Seth. Let's talk about some beer TV and beer video.
I feel good when I drink beer.
You know, we got our beer radio, and you know, somebody submitted us for a James Beard Award on the Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. And the nominees were announced yesterday, and we didn't get it. But someone called WBEZ in Chicago was nominated for two different podcasts. So next year we'll be there. We're working on it. But on another media, we got Jeff. You made a beer film at some point. Tell me about it, because I'm dying to see it. I know you're going to do a screening soon.
Yeah, I'm actually going to do it at Jimmy's Number 43. As a matter of fact, when I was sitting at the bar waiting to come in here today, I got the confirmation that it's going to be on April 25th at 7 p.m., so if you're in the New York area, I'll be screening the film. The film is called Beerituality. I shot it a few years ago, actually. It was the summer of 2009 when it was shot. It's comedy, basically focuses on a small town, which I call Brewster, obviously Brewster, you know. And there's a really popular bar there called Abbey Normal that, yes, Young Frankenstein reference. Suddenly, this sort of zealous reverend comes to town, and he's a total prohibitionist, and somehow he manages to become mayor, and somehow he manages to do a referendum where he's very charismatic and he gets people to vote to go dry. It was a very narrow margin, but the town goes dry. So this bar called Abbey Normal has to either go out of business, or as they're reading through this law, they discover that there's a loophole in the law. The only place that alcohol can be served in the town is at a religious service. If it is part of the religious ceremony, then alcohol is permitted. So the bar becomes a church, the Church of Beer. And that's the story in a nutshell. And it's just I had a ball making it. Basically gave up most of a summer to do it. And I want to give a shout out to my co-producers, Cindy Sabo and Lou Tambone, on that too. And it's available for either download or streaming at Amazon Video on Demand. They have a Video on Demand thing now, so you can do
it
on Amazon.
Beerituality.
It's called Beerituality.
So what kind of beers are they drinking in the Church of Beer?
There's a little bit of everything. There are scenes in it where they're drinking IPAs. There are scenes in it where they're drinking porters. There's actually a lot of it is based on, you know, I kind of grew up Catholic, so a lot of the iconography in this was based on Catholic things. So there's a whole part of the Catholic Mass where you're presenting the gifts that are presented. There's a glass full of hops. And
can you drink the beers in the church anytime or only during the service?
Well, the thing is, the service is always going on, so it's always a service. And it's you know, the taps are always flowing.
It sounds like some of the good pubs I like to go to.
Yeah.
You know, I'll make a side reference on spirituality. Last night I was at DBA in the East Village. I was drinking with Dennis. I don't even know his last name, but Radiator's partner. And we were toasting Ray because it was his birthday. Radiator's birthday was yesterday. And I felt like I was at the Church of Beer last night.
Well, drinking beer is a religious experience. And, you know, I tried to add a little bit of political satire to it, you know, a little bit of religious satire. But, you know, it wasn't bashing religion anyway. It was bashing extremism in religion and just sort of celebrating beer, celebrating moderation. Moderation's a big part of it. And just having a good time. And, you know, I don't want to give too much away about it, but, you know,
We're looking forward to seeing it. But you know what that brings up? I love the monastic tradition of drinking beer while you're fasting in Lent. And there was a guy a year or two ago that decided to live on a monk's diet of Doppelbock beer for 40 days of Lent. Do you guys remember who that was? Josh, do you know?
I think his name was actually Josh. Josh something or the other. But I think
Saint Josh.
He actually won a beer drinker. Like, Wanku Brewery out in Denver, Colorado does a beer drinker of the year competition every year, where they basically celebrate the person that's the wackiest, most dedicated to beer. Like Phil Farrell won last the year before because he brings around a rubber chicken to every beer festival and gets his picture taken with a rubber chicken and a random stranger.
But that's not Monastery.
That's not Monastery.
You know,
but,
Josh.
But
okay.
He won this year. That's
so what I know.
Saying.
So I had a cask last week.
Shut
it was
down.
An oak cask, so a very rare oak cask of Schlenkerla Fastenbier, which was their special Lent beer, which isn't that strong. You know, Schlenkerla has some really dark, you know, accented smoked beers. But this one was subtle. It was around 5.6%. But it did have a pronounced, like, bacon smell and taste. And they say that some of the monks would have been able to live off that for 40 days. You know about this, Justin. You know all the Schlenkerla stuff. Is this true?
I don't know about the fasting part.
Would monks have
delicious.
Lived off this beer?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's what's said. But
yeah, so the story I've heard is that the single is the fasting beer, the double is the drinking for food beer, and the triple is the party your ass off beer. That's like exactly what they're, you know, that's why the alcohol levels go up. That's the story I heard.
So what about the quadruple?
That's an American style that is obviously just because
that's a knock you on your ass beer.
Yeah.
But so you could live for 40 days just on beer. Nobody has an answer.
I suppose. Well, no. I mean, nutrient-wise,
you brought it up, Jeff. Jeff, you know, Church of Beer.
Well,
come
no,
on.
Nutrient-wise, yes,
and
you
church
can
they
because
fast.
You figure you've essentially got the bread group.
Yeah.
I guess that's of the food groups. You've got that's about it. I mean, I guess yeast isn't a group, but you know, actually, technically, fruit and vegetable hops can be technically considered a fruit or a vegetable, and. Water, there is no liquid group, but you know, you need water, so
I'm really surprised that no one in this room knows the name of the guy that did the 40-day, you know, Doppelbock fast like a year or two ago.
His name's like Josh. Do we not know him? It's like Josh Wilson or something like that. We don't have the internet near him.
It's something like
that. We can't answer the question right now.
Yeah, but maybe our producers can figure that out.
Internet!
But it was cool, and it really was inspired by these traditional beers, and they say that Doppelbock came from that.
I don't know. Is it a cool thing or is it a gimmick thing? I'm kind of tossed up about this stuff, because it seems like everyone's out there doing another like gimmick stunt, and it's just like I'm gonna live on beer for 40 days. Like, I can live on peanut butter for 40 days, but I don't want to. Like, I did when I was 20 years old and with a ramen diet too, you know.
So Josh nailed this. The guy is Jay Wilson.
Jay Wilson.
But it's a J, you know, J dot. He's not giving his first name.
J dot Wilson.
Well, I think that sometimes stunts can be fun, though. I mean, if you remember a few years back, I think it was Pete Brown, the author, he sailed, and this has nothing to do with monasteries, but he actually got on a boat and brewed some IPA. He wanted to taste what true IPA tasted like, you know, basically after having made the trip to India, but not through, you know, not a quick trip. Basically, in the years before there were canals, he essentially sailed from England down.
That's Africa?
Yeah, seriously. He went around the bottom of Africa, came back up, made his way to India. I think it was 18,000 miles he traveled on a boat. He you know, he's got a lot of strange stories. Like, he had some issues, you know, in Iran with customs there and stuff like that. But he – and I never found out, like, what it actually tasted like. But I assume he was writing a book about it because he wrote a brief article about it. I assume he was taking – the longer approach with it. But I mean, I think something like that is interesting because that's about as close an approximation as you're going to get to what the British sailors were tasting in India, because you're talking about however long it takes to go 18,000 miles on a boat. That's essentially what it tasted like.
I think the book was called For Hops and Glory, something like that. It goes in.
Oh, so he did do a book.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I read the article a few years ago.
He knows everything.
Josh is, you know, we're talking about the Deans of Beer. We got him here. We got Josh Bernstein. We got Jeff Cialetti. We got Justin Phillips. It's pretty awesome. Now let's talk about your show. Seth Wright, your first claim to fame was you're a kid on a TV show, weren't you?
Yes.
What show was that?
I was on Remote Control on MTV.
MTV. And how old
really?
Were you?
Yeah, I was like, what's fourth grade? I don't know actual age.
14.
No.
Oh my God. You're,
okay. Fourth grade. That dumb like, kids. What, like
so you're on MTV when you were like 9 years old, because 9 is fourth grade.
Yeah, something like that.
And then now you've been doing for a couple years now. It's Beer Nation TV. Is that the website?
Beer Nation Show.
Beer Nation Show.
And actually, it's funny that Jeff brought up moderation for his church because. Versus Beer Church, because the next episode they were coming out with, we were at Flying Dog a little while ago, but we were at Flying Dog and we thought it'd be really cool to sort of reenact some Fear and Loathing action, because they have the Hunter S. Thompson connection. So me and Mike went a little crazy. We did some Johnny Depp action, Dr. Gonzo stuff. And,
did you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that episode's coming out in the next week or two. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of, you know, like craziness. We have some guy with a shotgun. So
how many episodes are you up to?
We're at like 23 or 24. We've been doing it for like 2 years. We started in 2010. It does take a while to edit. So we're putting out like one a month. So we're, you know, since 2010, we're at about 24 now. But, you know, we try to keep it high quality. We don't want to put out stuff just to put it out. And so that's where we're at. But
you guys, you've also done like some bar interviews, right? You've gone to bars and...
Oh, yeah. Our show is mainly like, you know, breweries, bars. We've talked to bloggers. We like to discuss the entire craft beer revolution. So it's everyone... We did a show here at Beerson's.
That's
Radio.
Right. I remember that. Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
Actually, and you guys captured Ray Dieter. It was a great... That was part of a really great
right.
tribute.
That's
that you
right.
Guys
I mean, we thought it would be a good idea to show what happens behind the scenes of all aspects of craft beer, not just like what you know. Talk about the beers that you can get at the store and discuss. You know, like if we went to Flying Dog, it's like okay, you've got this. Tell us about it. Like that's boring. Everyone can do that. So you know, we wanted to like discuss the history behind it. Why is it exploding at your place? Why are there bloggers doing it? Why are there radio shows? So, you know, we're trying to sort of like stand back and look at the whole thing and, you know, the fact that there are 100 square foot beer stores now and that there weren't.
So what are the top three shows you did? What were the subjects specifically?
Well, we have a small movie called The Craft Beer Bandit. Now, it was kind of filmed for a film festival out in California. That's definitely one of the top things we put out. And actually, me and Mike, the hosts, weren't even really in it. But it's a Beer Nation production, and it's about this hooded figure that you don't see. And his whole thing is he's the bandit, and he steals people's crappy beers and switches them with good beer.
Sounds like that Miller ad. Which I don't usually reference the man guys, but the Miller ad where the guy goes in and takes the expired Miller out of a club. You're like, he's just taking,
oh, exactly, taking exactly. back the high life.
That's they're taking it back because the beer S-U-C-K-S's, and then they want to bring in craft beer. That's really what that ad's about, if you don't know that.
Yeah.
But.
Well, so yeah, so that's that.
So that's you're going to make a Miller ad next.
We've been contacted by them.
You should, man. You guys do a good job.
Yeah. We were thinking about it. We didn't know if we wanted to really...
Cool. I do love your stuff, too.
Thank you.
So to go back very briefly, could you remind me what Remote Control is about? Because it's like it's jogging some sort of like childhood memory thing where I can't quite remember.
What
like,
was it? It was like one of the first.
Not Singled Out. Like, that's...
No. That was the next one on MTV. But it was just there was big chairs and you actually were three contestants. You were asked questions about TV. And if you missed them, your chair like threw you back.
Yeah.
And so I actually at 9 years old was one of the hosts. sort of like young version of himself. So it showed like a baby and then a 9-year-old and a 14-year-old, all who love TV so much that they didn't want anything to do with anyone else. So the 14-year-old is hanging out with his girlfriend and he's just watching TV and doesn't care.
But this is hot.
So wait, you were the young Ken Over?
I was the
great, exactly. But guys, Ken bring Over, it back exactly. to reality. That's cool. So TV stars are getting into the beer scene. Oh my That's God. Awesome. Josh, what's now the beer we old. Have now? Let's bring it back to beer. What are we drinking? This one.
Oh, this is called Goulash. It's from Sweetwater down in Georgia. And it's called, they call it a double black, double dry hop, double India Pale Ale. I mean, it doesn't really taste like an IPA to me, but, it's just double.
So where does he get this beer? I've never heard of it. It's Sweetwater in Georgia.
Yeah, I'm at Beverage World, so I'm on their mailing list, so they're always sending me stuff. And they're actually pretty interesting. They're part of kind of this new South craft brewing movement. I mean, Georgia's doing, I mean, another one was Terrapin. But also South Carolina's doing really well now because they recently changed their laws there where they now allow high ABV beers. And I was in South Carolina probably about a year and a half ago in Charleston. And there's sort of a mini renaissance going on down there. And it's burgeoning. Give it 3 years, I guarantee South Carolina is going to be a craft beer mecca. But just as far as they've come since they changed the laws in 2007, they've come a long way. So just imagine what they're going to be like in, say, 2015, because it's pretty amazing what's going on there. There's a lot of great bars in Charleston.
Well, I think it was only in 2005 or so that North Carolina had popped the cap where they actually raised their law. Where, before it was some, I think now they can do up to like 12 or 15%.
Yeah, so, like West Virginia was 6 and now they're 12. It does change a lot. I mean, it's huge change.
I mean, a lot of it's like driven. Like, I know Alabama had a big issue for a while, and it was really the issue was distributors were down there. Like, the Bud distributors were like, you know what, we shouldn't be doing this because, no beers in their portfolio were above 6%. And so what's the point of them actually, allowing competition in there, basically? And so what's ended up happening is, like, that really stops a lot of big craft brewers coming in there because, yeah, they may have a few beers below 6%, but what's the point of bringing in 2 beers in your entire portfolio if you can't do the other 10 or 12 or 14?
Right.
Wow. Justin, I want to ask you, before we're talking about local, Jeff and Jeff, they were talking about local beers are the best. Well, you're the opposite. I mean, you have, like, the best beers in the world, and I always look to you as a curator of what's good. What do you think about this?
About
I don't know, man. You tell me.
Please, I drink beer from all over the place, and honestly, I kind of think of what I do as sort of like a blind experience. Beer is a global product, and I totally appreciate when folks want to consume as close to where they are. And certainly when I travel, I want to check out the beers of the region that I'm in and see what a place is all about. But beers it does kind of come from all corners of the earth, and that's kind of what's wonderful about it. Since my place doesn't really have any regional focus in terms of what we serve, not just with beer, but with food, it's a flavor experience. So I'm going to continue to, just kind of not only show everything that's out there that I think is just straight up delicious, but that's what I want to consume too. And I love it when it comes from, right here. It's great, but elsewhere is good too.
Okay. So what's tonight at Beer Table in Brooklyn? Like, you have what, 3 drafts usually?
No, a little over a year ago I put in a few more. So
what's on draft tonight? Last night?
Yeah. So we have our table beer on. We have the curator from Kloster Brewery Ettel, the monastic German brewery. What else do I have up right now? Here, let me just pull up the list.
All right. You keep a paper
Internet
list?
To the rescue. Yeah. And do you usually find the beers and then figure out what kind of food to pair, or do you change the food?
I don't think very often? I mean, I think all of our food is very beer friendly, but I don't literally do pairings. I think that's one of the things that folks think that I do, but I don't particularly care about that personally. Mm-hmm. I think most any food can work very well with beer, and I'm very interested in things that are have some sort of preserved element to them, because we're small, we don't do huge volume on anything really, so we need things that we can be really versatile with how we keep them and whatever. So I do a lot of dehydrating. Certainly there's a lot of vinegar involved. That's kind of a theme that runs through it.
Can I just say, at the Grand Central location, the pretzels there are amazing.
Sigmund's.
Oh, that where they're from? Yeah, they're just incredible. They're about as close to Bavarian pretzels as you're going to get.
Yeah, she does a great job. Wasn't she on the show recently?
Yeah, Lena from Sigmund's Pretzels. Yep, she's really carving a niche.
Yeah,
you know, classic pretzels for beer. I like hearing Justin talk because you really approach it differently than most people, and your everything that many of us aspire to with the goodbeerseal.com and Beer Sessions Radio Show. You know, thinking of quality and you know, the importance of good beer in your life. So this is the list from this is today's drafts at Beer Table. De Glazentoren, I can't pronounce it. Oh,
it's on Dinica, which is a Belgian triple, but then matured in a Zinfandel barrel from California. Super wacky.
And then Kloster Brewery, the Ital Curator.
Mm-hmm.
Porterhouse from Ireland, the plain porter. Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't had that.
It's great.
And Beer Table, Table Beer with Brian Strumke. Sharda Aventinus, always one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Red Hook Winery, Brooklyn Briscoe. What's that?
The first non-beer that I've poured. Darren from Red Hook Winery has been coming into Beer Table a lot, and he's a beer-loving wine guy, and he thought it'd be fun to put one up, and so we're doing it.
And then on cask, you have Harvest and Old Engine Oil Engineers Reserve. Wow. I've had Old Gin Oil, but that sounds pretty sick. What is it? Engineers Reserve.
it's like a dense, sort of strong version of Old Engine Oil that, you know, it's like bitter chocolate and soy sauce.
They also have a fun savory. Harbison has the Ola Dub, too, which is kind of sick, too.
Yeah, based on the same idea.
So what do you think about Harvested? We're going to sign off in a minute, but that's a pretty great list and so diverse, man. All I can say is just go to Beer Table, and it's with tablebeer.com to learn more about your new special collaborations. We'll call them collaborations.
Yeah, they're not really, but yeah, sure.
You know, do you have your big night there where you do like a big feast where people can go in there with like...
Yeah, we've started a Wednesday night family meal, which basically you just book the table and it's, you know, it's $200. So it's, you know, you can bring eight people if you want or bring four if you're very hungry. But
awesome. So
you go home with a bunch of food.
One of three tables.
Guys, beer table in Brooklyn. We got Justin Phillips and we're going to give a shout out to some events coming up. Hey, guess what? It's Beer Sessions Radio. We celebrate our 100th episode recently. Tomorrow night, Heritage Radio Network is going to salute us and some of the other hosts at Santos Party House downtown Manhattan. It's going to be a great party. There's going to be artisanal spirits, craft beer, and some really good foods. Check out heritageradionetwork.com. There's still tickets, but they're going fast. Also, this year, the Brewers Association, who's been really supportive of Beer Sessions Radio, presents their fifth annual Savor, S-A-V-O-R, an American craft beer and food experience, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th at the National Building Museum. You'll hear more about it. I've never been to Savor. Has anyone been there?
Yeah, I've been every year.
Yeah?
It's awesome.
It's good?
It's a good party.
So check out Savor.
There's no substitute.
It's called Gluttony.
Gluttony. And Good Beer Seal events. This Thursday, Beer Craft in Brooklyn, Founders Brewing Tap Takeover. Next Tuesday, the 27th, Rattle and Humble hosts Smaltz Brewing. And also on the 27th is the Tuesday tastings at Jimmy's Number 43. Mike Lavula is doing his Rye and Oats series, which is from last year. Rye and Oats. To thank our anything else you guys want to say, Justin? Anything coming up?
Thanks
next
for
week
having
or two? Awesome. Jeff, anything else besides your film?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I mean, it's been awesome, and I hope any local people in New York can come to the screening April 25th at Jimmy's Number 43.
So you're going to have to change the name of your film to Church of Beer.
Absolutely.
All right. Josh, anything going on? Where are you traveling? You've got your great book, Brood Awakenings. Where are you going next?
Good God.
We want to keep up with you.
I stopped traveling so much because I spent the last 3 or 4 months traveling across the country doing book events. But I'm going to be traveling all the way down the Lower East Side tomorrow night before the party to go do a signing at Top Hops.
All right.
And then after that, I'm off to, in April, going to Boston, then Minneapolis in early May to go check out.
Terrific. And Seth, anything going on with the Beer Nation show?
Well, I think me and you are going to figure out how we're going to do this Beer Fest TV thing. So that's in July.
Look forward to July. We'll have for July Goober Month. There's going to be one event at South Street Seaport Museum with the best of best of beer book blogs and videos. It's going to be something fun. And I'd like to thank our sponsors, GreatBrewers.com. Thank you so much. And again, check out GreatBrewers.com, the Beer Cloud. Thanks to Justin, Jeff, Josh, and Seth for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Carlos Salguero, and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator, Brett Thompson. See you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. Thank you, guys.
More to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com. well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.